Es folgt Parteienwerbung zur Bundestagswahl.
Unser Land verdient mehr als die gescheiterten Rezepte der alten Parteien. Mehr Lehrer und Ärzte, leistungsgerechte Löhne und höhere Renten, Investitionen in Straßen, Brücken und die Bahn und eine Politik des Friedens. Ich bin Sarah Wagenknecht und ich freue mich auf meinen Besuch in Ihrer Stadt.
Sarah kommt nach Dresden am 10. Februar um 17 Uhr in die Messe Dresden. Alle Tourdaten auf bswtour25.de.
Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
Mosquitoes whined by my head like old American biplanes. I swatted them down like I was King Kong. More launched into dizzying waves. Jesus, I muttered, slapping my sweat-slick skin each time I felt the tingle of a mosquito penetrating. I know how wrong that sounds. Imagine how it felt. It was an August night, and northern Maine was hell. The air was thick and ripe with humidity, and the woods spewed bugs like Chernobyl's blown reactor spewed radiation. I stood in the middle of the messy field behind the quaint, Cape Cod-styled Airbnb we had rented for the weekend. The grass licked to my knees, dried, yellowed, bound on three sides by thick woods, the house at my back, trees everywhere else. During the day, it was a dull, muddy view, the trees drooping and sad, the grass twisted and dead. But at night, it went alive with fireflies. Thousands of glowing bugs winked on and off, doing whatever the hell fireflies do. What do fireflies do? What's their purpose, I mean, other than leaving behind a luminescent smear when kids squash them? I'd have to Google that later. I caught some, Daddy, my daughter Eileen declared as she waded over to me, bright with excitement over the glowing mason jar cupped protectively to her chest. The grass rose to her neck, parting as she moved through. She was only six, small and precious, and to her, those things were very important. Look at him dance, Eileen exclaimed, thrusting the jar up at me. Is that what fireflies did? Dance. I made an impressed face at a jar of trapped bugs, a firefly prison. Was that a novel? Firefly Prison? Should be. Great title. That's great, hon. But where's Mama? It's time to go inside. She looked around, kind of lost. I sighed. Once I find him, it's bedtime. Fine, she huffed, bouncing off to catch more lightning bugs. As I drifted off towards a tall, scraggly, shadow-drenched forest in search of our dog, I felt a shiver ripple up my spine. It was creepy. Quiet and creepy. Mamet, I called, hating the way my words decayed out into the trees. David Mamet was our dog, a border collie still chugging on at the ripe age of 14. His muzzle grey, his eyes milky with cataracts. I had named him, and now I had apparently lost him. I jumped when I felt something loose and oily rub up against my leg. That was how Mamet felt these days. His fur was oddly slimy. He stood beside me, panting, a low whine building at the back of his throat. Where'd you go, buddy? I asked him. His wise and old eyes looked up at me. Before he could reply, my daughter cried out, Oh my God! I felt my neck prickle with dread. Daddy! She squealed. I couldn't see her through the grass, so I chased her voice and found her squatting on her haunches, crouched over something on the ground. The jar of fireflies, the prison, was capsized in the grass beside her, the lid sprung. Patrolled fireflies drifted out into freedom. What's wrong, honey? Are you hurt? I asked, concerned. But when she looked up at me, I saw She was smiling.
Look, Daddy, she hefted it up. I caught a shooting star.
What is it? My wife, Monica, asked, puzzled. She was tall, earthly beauty, with firm features and long brown hair. Her big green eyes were fixed on the thing sitting in the middle of the dining room table. It was a three-dimensional, five-pointed star about the size of a frisbee. The kind of thing you'd see topping a Christmas tree. Its construction was strange. It might have been quartz crystal. But no, it's too light for quartz, only weighing about as much as a hardcover book. Its color was milky and opaque, marbled here and there with darker, earthly tones. Its unblemished surface smooth but not cold. Its tips pointed but not sharp. Holding it, you could feel an almost deep vibration, a power resonating in its depths, leeching out. But that wasn't even the incredible part.
Watch this, Mom, Eileen squealed.
She touched one tiny index finger to the star's center, finding the slight incline that rose up between his 5 points. Without any sort of dramatics, the star lit up, a warm, reddish-brown light emanating from deep within its core. She touched the spot again, and the light extinguished.
Okay, what?
Was all my wife could say, astonished, slightly concerned.
It's a shooting star, Mummy. I caught a shooting star,
Eileen said in one great burst. We've been seeing them all night, ratcheting through the night sky on important galactic business. That said, I didn't know what the hell this thing was, or where it had come from. My daughter claimed she had seen it hovering in the air just above the grass, said it was talking to her. Crazy, right? But she was small, and I didn't want her growing up too fast. So, I indulged her little fantasy. Eileen found it in the field, I said, not wanting to admit I'd taken my eyes off her, if only for a moment.
She found it in the field? Monica asked incredulously.
She gave me a look I knew all too well. It said, and where were you?
Can I keep it? Eileen begged. Please, please, please.
I remember what I said next in startling clarity. It was the three-sentence catalyst that had shredded through my life like an industrial combine. A great whirring blades of a tractor that would go chewing through my family, sparing only a clumpy red mess in its wake. Monica shot me a look that said, we are not keeping that. And I ignored it, not wanting to disappoint my daughter. Just for the weekend, honey, I said. But when we get home, it stays here. Could be someone else left it behind. They might want it back. My daughter squealed, wrapping me in a hug, before lugging a shooting star upstairs. Monica's face darkened, flushing with blood. She felt betrayed, like I had gone behind her back. And maybe I had. But what the hell? What was the big deal? The star was harmless.
I don't want that thing in the house, she hissed in my ear. What's the harm? I asked. I don't...
She trailed off, shook her head.
It gives me a funny feeling in the bottom of my stomach. I don't like it.
What's wrong with it?
You found it out in the field, Mark. And how does it glow? There's no battery panel or little charging ports. How does it light up?
I sighed.
Could be one of those tech things you see in the back of Christmas gift catalogs. Could be nothing to it. They have wireless charging now.
She shook her head again, but I could see she was relenting, feeling silly. She pinched the bridge of her nose, sighed, looked up at me, tired.
Where's Marmot? I should take him out before bed.
I hadn't seen him since I had to practically drag him inside. He'd been acting strange ever since we found the star, whining and violently thrashing his head, like the thing emanated a high-frequency hum he didn't care for. I'm not sure. Around? When I finally did find him the next morning, curled up in the upstairs closet. He was dead. Blood crusted over his old grey muzzle, running in trickles from his eyes and nose. We buried Mamet in the back of the field, marking his grave with an oblong rock. His death had put a dampen on the vacation, but I'd paid for the weekend, and, despite my wife's protests, wasn't keen on leaving early. We ate dinner in silence, Aileen's star on her lap, comforting her it seemed. After that, my wife and daughter built a pillow fort in the living room, the glow of the star silhouetting them through sheets and blankets. Then, the world grew dark, and it was time for bed. I went to kiss Aileen goodnight, when I heard her speaking in low tones. I paused outside the bedroom door and listened. "Why would I do that?" she was saying in a hoarse whisper. "I love my mom and dad." "What the hell?" I thought. I eased open the door and saw Aileen sitting crisscross applesauce on the end of the bed. The star was glowing and levitating head level with her. It instantly dropped to the ground. Aileen looked up at me, startled. "What?" Then my voice caught in my throat. I couldn't think, couldn't breathe. The damn thing had been floating. "What's wrong, Daddy?" My daughter's voice came from a faraway place. My vision swam, pinned on the impotent star at the foot of a bed. I could almost feel my thoughts and feelings sucking toward it, like it was lassoing them out of my head. I fished for my voice. It wouldn't come. Then it did, clear as day. It was the voice of lies, of falsehoods and wrongdoings. It was my voice, but it didn't come from my mouth. It was whispered right in my ear. It said, "Stay." I jumped and whirled around. Behind me, the upstairs hallway was empty. It was empty and dark, wrapped in shadow. Then it was flooded with warm, buttery light from Eileen's bedroom. I knew that light. Starlight. The air changed, moved around me, charged and alive. I slowly turned, knowing what I'd find. I turned and saw the star floating just before my eyes. Floating before me, smooth and awful. Its light warm and blinding. Red liquid bloomed to its surface, swirling and dancing beneath the star's skin. I knew instantly. It was the blood of my family. The world spun around me. Darkness crashed in on my vision. I heard my daughter say stay as I crumpled down in the darkness. I awoke in bed, Monica dampening my forehead with a cool towel. "What?" I started. "Shh, you need to rest." "Aileen." "She's fine. She's asleep with a star." I bolted up in bed, startling my wife back a step. "Get it away from her." "What?" She looked surprised. "It's comforting. It was flying," I snarled. Monica's eyes widened with surprise. Not used to that tone from me. "I didn't think having it is such a bad thing," she said. "If it helps to process Mama's death." A cold bolt of unease shot through my chest. Last night, she had been against letting Aileen keep it. But suddenly, it was okay. Then I had a revelation. A slimy, awful revelation. I looked Monica in the eyes, remembering what my daughter had said. "Does it talk to you?" I asked. My wife's face answered for her. The colour drained away. Her eyes darted away from mine, then instantly back. "Does what talk to me?" she lied. I stood up and brushed past her, storming up the hall and into my daughter's room. She was sound asleep, basked in the glow of the star, which sat harmlessly on the bedside table. I grabbed it and breezed outside without even waking her. I brushed the star center, dousing its light, and frisbee tossed it as far away as I could. It spun off, disappearing into the field with a muffled report. Then I went inside and crashed into the deepest sleep of my life. I awoke just before noon, a blast of late morning sunlight hammering through the windows. I groaned, my head pounding, felt like I'd polished off 2 6-packs last night. I stumbled downstairs into the kitchen. My daughter and wife were at the kitchen table eating peanut butter sandwiches. Monica and I avoided eye contact. The air was loaded, heavy with the aftermath of our conversation last night. I grabbed a mug from the cupboard. The coffee pot shattered at my feet. The mug did a second later. My wife and daughter's head snapped back up in a bit of slapstick that would have been funny under other circumstances. But there was nothing funny about the star planted on Eileen's lap. The one I'd thrown out last night. Where? I wetted my lips. Where did you get that? Where'd I get what, Daddy? She asked. Star. All I can manage. She frowned. Beside my bed? The room swam. My breath went shallow. A cold rasp in my chest. I was going to faint again. I steadied myself on the counter. Looked my family in the eyes. I took a deep breath and they shot into focus. We're leaving right now. I bolted upstairs and started packing. Monica found me in a mess of clothes. Mark, what's with you? We're leaving early, I said, throwing a jacket into my suitcase, like you suggested. I think, she hesitated. I think we should stay a while, another week maybe. This place is where Mamet died. The Dark Eileen's known all her life. She needs time to process that. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. What are you saying? She looked away, before summoning the nerve to meet my gaze. I extended our stay for another few days. You did what? Just until Eileen... It's no big deal. Why didn't you talk to me about this? She frowned. We did talk about it, last night. No, we didn't. I stopped, my mind racing. Had we talked about it? Last night was a blur, a hole in my memory. I remembered tossing the star into the field. But why had I thrown it outside? I couldn't remember anything beyond that. I let out a long, uneven sigh, slumped down on the bed, the weight of the world on my shoulders. Monica's hand found my back, pulled me into a hug. It felt good, warm and good. She leaned in, whispered in my ear, "Stay." All at once, I remembered. I remembered last night, remembered the hovering star, remembered the word I had heard in my own voice that wasn't my own at all. I pried loose on my wife's embrace. I looked her in the eyes and saw a dim glow flickering just behind her pupils. Starlight. A memory fought to the front of my brain. A memory of my wife and daughter sitting in that pillow fort, bathed in the star's warm, soft light. A cold blanket of fear swallowed me. I staggered to my feet. Monica's arms tried to pull me back. I wrenched free. Stay, Mark, please. I ignored her, rushed out into the dining room, my wife calling after me. Eileen was still at the dining table, her face pale, cheeks gaunt. She looked sick, like a kid from a children's hospital commercial. Stay, Daddy, my daughter groaned, her voice hoarse. Can't you stay? The star was hovering beside her and spinning at incredible velocity. It was like a hacksaw blade screaming in place, its pointed tips a blur of jagged angles. It was flickering, throbbing with light. Awful, harsh light. Stay, Mark, Monica's voice in my ear. Stay with me and Eileen. But it wasn't Monica's voice at all. It was the star's voice. It was the star. Stay, Daddy. Stay. Eileen, get away from it, I screamed. But it was too late. With a great flash of light, the star shot forward and tore through my daughter. That moment is a blur, a fragment, a memory shattered by my tortured mind. I remember a great wet shredding sound, like a damp log being fed through a wood chipper. My daughter didn't scream. Her ruined body hit the floor with a thud, a hot splash of guts and blood slapping the whitewashed walls as she fell. My wife brushed past me, chanting, "Stay, stay, stay." She stood, arms out, a gore-splattered star hovering and twisting in the air before her. Monica looked like a worshipper, paying tribute to a lord, intoning the same word in a flat, leveled voice. Stay, stay, stay. Then the star blasted forward. I remember my wife's death more clearly. A long, horrible frame of violence. The spinning star blew through her face, grinding through her beauty in a burst of red. Twists of brain blew out like shrapnel. A shard of a jawbone embedded itself in my cheek, just below my right eye. I didn't even feel it. Didn't feel the soft, warm rush of blood trickle down my face and onto my shirt. I was rooted in place, my whole body heavy, encased in lead. My wife's lifeless body pitched forward and hit the floor with a dead thump, landing beside my ruined daughter. There were tangles of bent limbs, a syrupy pool of blood expanding beneath them. And still, I heard their voices, overlapping, chanting, a cacophony of stays in both my ears. Stay, stay, stay. The star turned on me, whirring, hovering, spinning, a blur of movement. My wife and daughter's voices were getting louder. The star, drenched in their blood, spun, waiting for me to accept my fate, waiting for me to stay. The voices in my ear louder now, deafening, burrowing through my brain like small brown insects. Stay, stay, stay. I scraped the bottom of my soul, channeling my anger and pain and confusion in a roar. No, I screamed with everything I had. All at once, there was silence. My wife and daughter's voices gone. The star pulsed, its light blasting out, dousing the room in crimson. Then, bam. It blew through the ceiling, disappearing into the sky, leaving behind two broken things that were the loves of my lives. I collapsed over their bodies and sobbed. The next few weeks were a blur of hospital and interrogation rooms, a blur of nurses and detectives. I don't remember anything but the dull, constant ache in the center of my heart, my broken, twisted heart. The one moment I remember with any clarity is being charged with the murder of my family. As I write this, I'm currently standing trial for the deaths of my wife and daughter. No murder weapon was recovered, but detectives are convinced I must have hidden it in the vast, untouched forest sprawling the world beyond that field. What am I supposed to say? It flew off into the sky? My lawyers are fighting for an insanity plea. And maybe I am insane. After everything I've seen, I can't be sure anymore. I've thought a lot about that star, where it came from, where it went. I don't know what it was, and I'm not sure I want to. I suppose this is a cautionary tale, a warning, and if I can spare one family the agony I've gone through, I'll have succeeded. If you ever find a star in the field behind your house, or in the grass, or in the woods, leave it and run. Forget you ever saw it. Run, and whatever you do, no matter what, don't stay.